Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett and today we are talking our top 30 startup keeper ranks. And as always, we've got Stevie Fizz with us. Welcome, Steve.
G'day, Jono. G'day, listeners out there. And I've got to be honest, I'm not feeling too great this week. I'm feeling a bit old because on the weekend I've tried on a flat-brimmed cap. I don't know if you've seen the kids getting around with the flat-brimmed caps. And I thought, I'm in the market for a new cap. So I tried one on and not good. Not good. Looked like a railway conductor or something. I'm officially old.
I haven't bought a hat in 10 years and I think that's it. I'm just going to wear them out until I die and then I'll just buy a big wide brim cricket hat.
Yeah, not good.
And as always, we've got our Tasmanian resident, the Statesman. Welcome to you. He's back from his loved up getaway of last Valentine's Day. So I hope you had a good time.
It was absolutely wonderful. I would say it was a week and a half off, gentlemen, but I don't think I've been busier in my life. But having a ball, really enjoying it. I must admit, full head of hair, no real need for caps beside avoiding the sun on the occasional day at the cricket. So I'm feeling nice and young with the old juice in the hand, gentlemen. Nutribullet.
I don't know why you need a hat at the cricket with all the shade I throw on cricket. That's strange.
And it's never sunny in Tasmania, so you don't need that hat anyway.
Twice as hot, gents. Twice as hot.
But listeners, we do have a very special guest on the show today. It is Monty, the founder of fanfooty.com.au and the writer of the Ultimate Footy Draft Kit. And he's on the show today just to tell us a little bit about it, how it works and where we can get it from. Welcome to you, Monty.
Well, thanks, Steve-O, Jono and Statesman. It's been a long time since I've been on a podcast about fantasy football. But yes, hopefully I'll remember all the things you're supposed to do. I think you're supposed to talk into a microphone, don't you? Yeah, that's about it, really. I'll let you get on with explaining what what the rest of the show is about. But yes, I'm happy to talk all Ultimate Footy draft material of keepers, dynasties, redrafts, anything. I've done them all and. I'm even older than some of you on this podcast, so yeah, a few more runs on the back, apart from maybe stats.
I will say at the end of the day, age is no barrier, but I am the youngest looking out of all of us, so it doesn't really matter. Now, Monty, I do have a question because I've been hit up quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. Now, I must admit, when it comes to first-year players, I like waiting for the exposed form because anyone can look at the draft, see the numbers at TAC Cup, or the national championships. But until I see where they fit in with a club, because you can have the world's best midfielder at TAC Cup, he ends up being a back pocket player. But have you got a feel of this year's recruits of who is going to be a ball magnet for those that are looking at the dynasty leagues?
I think in the olden days, you got a lot more rough diamonds at the end of drafts. And I think with the added professionalism that's come from, I think not the current CBA, but the previous one, the clubs have poured a lot more money into recruiting and it's got a lot more professional and there's a lot more resources thrown at it. And you don't find too many James Herds anymore down at 76 or wherever he was. The top 15 are probably the top 15. You don't find as much the diamonds in the rough as he used to. So I think, assuming that Cam Rainer gets over his laceration, which has become infected, I think he'll probably be the best of the draft class, at least in the first year. But I think in draft leagues, at least in redraft leagues, I mean, obviously we're going to be talking about keepers tonight. That's something that's a different kettle of fish. But certainly in redraft leagues where you only have a player for a year, I don't really pay too much attention to first-year players because the baseline for most of the positions is higher than what the average of first-year players, even number one draft picks, is going to put out for you in the first year.
No, absolutely. And just for those listeners that have been asking that question, I will do an article or at least a bit on one of the pods, but we will wait till the JLT series comes through so we can see the first couple of weeks of that series. That way we see a little bit of exposed form because we can give you the data, but it's all readily available through the draft tracker on afl.com.au. So you can actually see all their information from TAC Cup and the national championships. I'd rather wait till we see the exposed form, then I'm quite happy to give my top 5 to 10 on what's going to be a potential long career for those players.
Yeah, absolutely. And a bit of news coming out. We've all probably heard it over the weekend. Jordan Goey joining the old glug glug vroom vroom club. indefinite suspension, training away from the group, got to get a full-time job outside of football, and I think it was a 10 grand fine. So I think we're just wiping him off our draft boards right about now.
Now, Steve, he's one of your 12 keepers. Obviously, you had a few decent players that weren't going to be part of the 12. Does that action change your action?
I don't know. It's just too early to tell. I mean, forwards are readily replaceable. We know it's the deepest position going around, so I don't think you've lost too much there that you can't just pick up and stream the position sort of off the waiver wire. It's not the end of the world. It's not ideal, obviously, because he's not increasing his value whilst he's not playing.
When they say
I
indefinite,
did like
how
one of the.
bad does Collingwood have to be before he gets into that team, though?
Sorry?
How bad does Collingwood have to be going this year before he gets back in that team, do you
They
think?
need him. This is the problem. They need him.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, Bucks is on the line. Let's be honest.
He's got that as well.
Yeah, and I will say, gentlemen, one of the funniest comments I saw when it all was streaming through was someone put on Twitter, "Come on, guys, it was his dog."
Think everyone made that joke there.
Yeah, that joke was funny for about 5 minutes, and then Titus made it, and then it was old. So once I think once Titus does a joke, then it's over.
That's exactly right. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at the Draft Doctors, at Statesman33, and at Monty. That's a zero where the O is supposed to be. So at Monty on Twitter. We've got the websites now, thedraftdoctors.com.au. We've got articles dropping each and every week there. And we've got the mock site, which is mock.thedraftdoctors.com.au, where you can go out there each and every day and do two free mock drafts. In both formats.
I must say that's a very valuable service. That it's about time someone and I'm sad that I didn't have the time to do it myself at Fan Footy, but you guys have stepped up to the plate and more power to you. It's something that these industries needed for a long time, and everyone should get on board.
Yeah, and the feedback we've gotten back from it's just been outstanding. So really happy the way it's going. But we are talking top 30 startup keeper rankings for the AFL fantasy format game. And Statesman, why don't you kick us off with who your number one player was?
And of course, I'm doing my rankings all based on AFL fantasy because I don't understand the scoring of the other model. So we're starting with number one, and he was my number two last year. And it wasn't it amazing the change in his game once he got a coach that understood how he plays, and that's Tommy Mitchell, 24 years of age. He averaged 128 last year, and that's backing on his 118 average in 2016. Points per minute, gentlemen, last year was just outstanding. 120 points per 100 minutes is just quite remarkable. So nice and easy, number one. He's still got another 6, 7, hopefully 8 years of that top line scoring. It's only injury that's going to curtail him. Number two was our number one under 23 player, and that's Zach Merritt, only 22 years of age, 2 years of 117 average. Now, you guys know how I work. This is all based on a formula. So they get points per age, points for their last 2 years of average, points for their games over the past 3 years. And of course, my most important stat, especially when you've got limited game time for some players as they develop, is your points per minute. So Zach Merritt was clearly number two. In fact, he almost surpassed Tommy Mitchell. And it's just because he's a couple years younger. But that's elite scoring for his age. I don't remember anyone going this early. So 20 years of age, he was pumping out an average of 117. In third position, 28, which is our oldest player in our top 10, Patrick Dangerfield. We all know why. The man's a superstar. He was third last year as well. In fourth position, 25 years of age, is Adam Treloar, 109 backing on to his 111 average in 2016. And rarely misses a game of football. So Adam Treloar finishing in fourth position. One of my favourites at number five, and that's Matt Crouch. His first major breakout, he's only 22. His points per minute is just outstanding, gentlemen. He's raised from 36th position last year up to number five. Matt Crouch is going to be a superstar when he gets the right time on ground. When he gets to that level where he's 82 to 84% on ground, he is going to be right up there with Zach Merritt scoring. So you're looking just under the 120 mark. That's going to be his ceiling. Number six is Josh Kelly. Obviously breakout last year. Hampered a little bit because his average the previous year was 91. Points per minute's a little bit lower than everyone ahead of him. So he's getting a fair bit of the game time at age 23. I think that's about his peak. He might go a little bit higher, but we're talking his ceiling's probably at the 115. Our first non-mid, and I've based this on the full data, so therefore you're probably looking at the captain choices sort of model. So Rory Laird is the first non-mid at 23 years of age. He's clearly the number one defender. He gets a few bonus points because he is that defensive position and likely to retain that as well. So he's gone from 24th position last year all the way up to number seven. Dusty Martin at number eight, 26 years of age. He's had two fantastic years. We know he's been a gun footballer for a long time, but he's really getting consistency happening. He doesn't miss games and got a good points per minute, puts him in the top 10. Bit of a fall from grace for the next one, gentlemen. Number nine, it's Lachie Neale. Obviously went down from 111 average the previous year to 101. He hits 25 this year, so he's no longer the spring chicken. So he does need to give us a bit more consistency, rarely misses a game of footy and good points per minute as well. And number 10, this one surprised me a little bit, gentlemen, because he was in the top 10 last year as a defender, but he's mid only this year, but his scoring and his points per minute has actually put him in the top 10, even though he's previously was known as a bit of an injury risk, and that's Taylor Adams, 116 average at 25 years of age, backed on to 102. He's played 55 games out of a maximum 66 over that three-year period, and good points per minute puts him in the top 10.
I've got to be honest, Tasman, this is pretty unbelievable. We actually have all the same players
wow.
in the top 10. Just ordered. Oh, I couldn't. I'm staggered. I'm
first time ever.
Yeah, like I've got
hold
Kelly.
On.
I've
hold
got
on.
Kelly.
You. You and I working off data. Let's see what happens when it comes to gut feel. But sorry, what?
Well, I'll tell you where my gut feel breaks is Josh Kelly. I've got second because everyone loves Josh Kelly. You got to get past
Josh
this.
Kelly's my number two as well.
You got to go with the crowd sometimes, man. You got to see the trade value. You've got to see the guy's not going to get injured. It's all about Jay Kelly. I've got Dusty at four, whereas you had him at eight, purely because he never misses. And I think he ages really well. Like your best ability is your availability. We always say it. If he plonks himself forward later in his career, well, you've got him for another 7 years. Like, forget about it. He's as good as they get. Treloar, I had sixth. Taylor Adams, I had a little bit higher at seventh because the Pendlebury era is about to go by the wayside. And
it's
we
gone.
Saw what Taylor Adams. We saw what Taylor Adams can do when he's left to his own devices in the middle. I've got Rory Laird at 10.
All right, so you guys brought me on to talk about draft rankings, and I published one last year, and then this year again in the Ultimate Footy Draft Kit. And the one that got the most criticism last year, justifiably so, was my Zach Merritt ranking. I thought he was going to have a shocker because I thought that the returning Essendon stars were going to
Many did,
take his
yep.
midfield time and. But yeah, which I was dead wrong about. However, I've gone back to the well this year, and I reckon that I've actually ranked him at in redraft leagues. I've ranked him at 36 this year,
Wow.
because and I'd like your opinion on this. Why is it that everyone is ranking him so highly? You guys reckon he's number two in a startup keeper league. I think the your competition might have drafted in number two in a redraft league during the week. Why is Merritt so loved by everyone else except me when his scores dropped 20 points after the bye last year? I don't trust the rest of that Essendon midfield to block for him. I mean, it's not as if he's got the midfield that Chris Judd had around him at the Eagles, and he needs it, I think. Because they're not good enough to block for him, and he's getting tagged out of it. I don't understand why people have got such faith in him.
My ranking here is just based on the data. So what it is working on his age, his last 2 years of averages, which in AFL Fantasy is 170 each. He's played 60 out of a total of 66 games, and his points per minute last year was 116 points per 100 minutes. So that is all purely database. I love Zach Merritt because he is a seagull.
Well, yeah, you look at his kick to handball ratio, and it is very focused towards kicks. But I mean, I think you do need to address the wide gulf between the first half of last year and the second half of last year. Surely you must realise that, acknowledge that there has to be some ranking downgrade of him based on the fact that at 20 points, there's a lot of points to drop in average from before the bye to after the bye.
Yeah, I'll have a quick look at his data right now, but I certainly have no major concerns when you have a bit of a flux here and there, and that depends on how the whole club's going. And I'm looking at the second half of the year, and yes, I'll agree it was a bit of a downturn, but he still scored two scores over 140. He also had. What did we hit by was 13. He also had another score that was a 120. So, and his lowest score there was one in the 70s, being 78. One in or two in the 80s, which included the elimination final, and the rest were in the 90s or tons. So, I'm pretty comfortable with that. So, I understand your point. Yes, his second half of the year wasn't as good as his first half. He got tagged in three of those games. Out of the games he got tagged, he got an 80, a 90, and a 91, a 96 and a 91. So it doesn't end his world. It's not like Elliot Yeo is going to pump out a 30 for you, or a Rory Sloane that does a
Yeah,
50 and 60.
I'm not saying draft him, after the sixth
Yep.
round. All I'm saying is that you have to downgrade him at some point, and especially in a keeper
No,
league. Getting a number two in a keeper league, that's.
yeah, no, and I would be quite comfortable. So if the draft was to happen now, and someone took Tom Merritt, I'm taking Zach second in a startup keeper league. He's 22 years of age, already shown he's an absolute magnet.
Right, well, I knew I was coming on and talking about this issue, so I've drawn up a quick top 10. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely, fire away.
All right. Tom Mitchell, number one. Clayton Oliver, number two. I don't know, I can't understand why you can't why he gets no respect in your top 10 either.
Well, can
He's
I ask you the question, which is exactly the same question? Is he dropped on an average 20 points from the first half to the second half of the season? Did exactly the same thing as what Zach Merritt did.
Yeah, well, that's because he was in his second year, and second year syndrome is a real thing.
No, absolutely. And
The
Zach Merritt was
tradition.
only 21 last year.
He was in his third year, so that's the difference between the second and third years. This is a very much a well established thing about the way that players' bodies react to the first preseason that they do, which is obviously
Absolutely.
when they're coming into the system, they have a fairly light preseason because they're only 18 or 17 or 18, and then it's the second preseason where they really try to get the bulk into them, and that's why especially at the end of the second season. It's very natural for players to drop off. But when they get into the third season, that's when they should have the stamina and the endurance to be able to run a season out. So with Zach Merritt, it wasn't the second year syndrome that Oliver had, which was a perfectly understandable physical reaction to the added workload. It was the tagging. And that's an issue that's not related to his body. It's related to the players around him, and it's a different issue. So that'd be my explanation of that. Anyway, I'll push on with the rest of the list here. Kelly, Mitch Duncan, I really liked Mitch Duncan's game last year. I thought he took it to another level, and I think he'll actually benefit from Ablett being there because you look at his numbers, he's just as good as Kelly. I'd be happy with either Kelly or Duncan at three or four. I think they're pretty much the same player. Dangerfield five, Matt Crouch, Dusty, Brad Crouch. I think he's not quite as good as Matt, but I think he deserves to be in the conversation for the top 10. And then a couple of non-mids to round out the top 10, Billings and Lloyd. I think, obviously Billings at the moment, he's obviously under a bit of an injury cloud, but long term, there were times that last year where he looked like the only good player that St Kilda had. And I think he's going to turn into, just the same as Tom Mitchell looked like the only good player that Hawthorn had sometimes. So I think he's a star, and he'll only get better. And he's still very young. I think my top 10 is probably younger than your average, but I do like picking the young players in the startup keeper league. And then Jake Lloyd, I think. Yeah. Again, the issue there is whether he maintains that back designation. And Seb Ross, I think, is thereabouts as well. I'd pick all of those 11 before I'd pick Zach Merritt personally.
Wow.
That's a hot
Well, I'm
take.
happy to be on any draft league with you, mate. Not a worry in the world.
That's what everyone
I'll
says. I
pick him
wonder
up at
why.
35 before you pick him up at 36. That'll be fine by me.
Well, let's not get up to Tuke Miller because then we'll be here all night.
Oh, God. Just quickly, pretty much had this, did have all the same players as you, Statesman. They're all just in different positions, one or two here or there. So we agreed on something which has never happened here
It's
on the
never happened.
Draft Doctors. So
It hasn't.
fire away for
Well,
no, fire away
unless,
for your next
I'm
10 then.
glad to have. I was just saying, I'm glad they have provided a different opinion, so you can actually have something to argue about.
It's
I
perfect
think the
timing
next.
bringing you on, Monty, to be fair. This is the first time we've ever agreed on anything. But they weren't in the same positions either. So pushing on to the second 10. So in 11th position is Marcus Bontempelli, 21 years of age. I think we've all been expecting a little bit more. Now, let's face facts. This guy right now is a Supercoach player, not really a Dream Team player. But the last 2 years, he's averaged 99 and 110. If he can find a way to get more than 10 possessions a game, he might be able to get his average over 120. So let's see if that actually happens.
Well, you just got to talk to Luke Beveridge and tell him not to play as a key forward for
Yes,
half a game.
that's very, very true. Well, they've got a plethora of those now, so let's see how they use all these tools. He's played 64 of the 66 games, which does help his cause, but only 22 years of age. There's a bright future ahead for Marcus Bontempelli. Patrick Cripps sits in at number 12 again. Young fella, 22 years of age. Hasn't played all the games, 58 out of the 66, but he has average 98 and 99 in those 2 years, and his points per minute is pretty spectacular, gentlemen. So once he does get his body right, they're all saying this is his first full pre-season. Let's see what he can pump out. Again, I think a bit more of a Supercoach player than he is AFL fantasy, but I would be expecting between the 105 and 110 average with a full pre-season under his belt. Number 13. Now, again, we're talking data. So data doesn't count into our fears and our concerns for the future, gentlemen. But number 13 is Brodie Grundy, 107 and 100 in his last 2 years as a 23-year-old ruckman is absolutely outstanding. 60 games and a good points per minute. This does include games where Cox was playing, gentlemen, so the data still rings true. But, of course, we're very concerned that he's going to play less and less as that standalone ruckman. Number 14, I thought it was a fall from grace, but it's exactly where he was last year, 14th, and that's Ollie Wines, 23 years of age. His points per minutes, again, gentlemen, are just superb, 99 and 100. He's got to do more, which is really, he's got to be given more game time. So let's hope he's worked on his tank. Number 15, Monty raised him before, being Clayton Oliver, turns 21 this year, an average of 101, obviously 80 in his first year, was reasonably impressive. His points per minute look good, another one that might get the increase with the time on ground. Number 16 is Isaac Heaney, 21 years of age. It was his first breakout last year. We probably won't see him as a forward for a long period of time, but it looks like probably another year or two. They're talking of him having the same mix as what he did last year, which is about the 60-40, 60 in the midfield, 40 up forward. So if he retains that position for a while, he's going to be in your top three forwards. Dropping down from number 7 all the way to 17 is Jack McRae. The main reason that he has is purely and simply he's lost that forward status. But he plays every week. He's missed a consistency. When talking about Clayton Oliver, Jack McRae is the only other one that really hit that sort of ton mark in his second year. He's never really taken that next step. He's just hang around that ton of season average. So let's see what happens. He's turning 24 this year. This one disappointed me. He's dropped down out of the top 10, and it was only last year, but it was because he had several operations. He's fully fit this year, and I expect him to hit the top 10 mark again, and that's Luke Parker, 89 after a season of 109 previously. Even when injured, he keeps on playing. He hardly misses a game of footy, and points per minute is sensational. If they do change his role, it's only going to be benefit keeper leagues because he'll end up picking forward status if they spend a bit more time up forward with him. Number 19 is Jack Billings. I rate him highly too, Monty. 94, 80 is his last 2 years. The thing that holds him back in the data is the games played. So the injury concerns have been there. He's only played 48 games out of a possible 66. So it does hold him back a little bit, but we all know the potential. The gut feel would say he deserves to be higher. I don't think he's going to be one of these players that actually lose the forward status. I reckon he's going to be one that constantly gets that over 35% mix. So I think he's going to be a long-term forward and a long-term fantasy star. And number 20, he wasn't even in the top 50 last year, and that was because of the consistency issue. We got rid of the second yo. He's no longer yo-yo. He's just yo, and that's Elliot Boy, who's a defender this year after averaging 99 in fantasy. I think it was 102 in Supercoach. He's played 63 out of the possible 66 games. His points per minutes are pretty good. His role does determine how well he scores, to be fair, gentlemen. When he's a close-down defender, you get nothing. When he's a rebound defender, you get the world. When he's a midfielder, you get consistent scores. If we ever lose him to the midfield full-time, he's not an Uber premium. He's only actually a premium when he's got defender and or forward status.
Yeah, so I guess I'll jump in. I'll start at Patrick Cripps. I've got him down at 27.
Wow.
The fact he can't stay on the park and the handball ratio is pretty ordinary. Kills him for me.
58 out of 66 games is certainly not as bad as what people think.
Well, I don't trust him, man. I don't trust. He's got that taste, you know that taste.
Is it because he's like West Australian? Don't trust like him. He's from Nutribor. WA.
I think back injuries are a problem. They can linger, unfortunately.
I do have Billings quite a lot higher. I've got him at 12. I thought I was reasonably high on Grundy when I put him in at 21 because of the Mason Cox thing, but.
I agree. It's just the data.
But it's 21. Like, you know, I think that's really fair. I also had Parker in there. I also had McRae a little bit higher. I had Heaney at 11. And the only, oh, the three players I didn't have in there, starting at 20, I had Sloane in there. 19, I had Rockliffe in there. And 16, I also had Mitch Duncan. The thing about Mitch Duncan that sort of concerns me, and I can't have him in the top 10 like Monty did, is just, he just hasn't done it before last year. I love him as a player. I love watching him play. I think 16's a really fair ranking, but what can you say? Like, these are all gun players.
The Geelong watch is really interesting because we're going to see halfway through this season and go, oh, we should have known that. Now, to me, they've actually got less midfielders than Moore. But if Ablett actually plays that role of him and Dangerfield swapping, so they've always got someone lethal in front of goal, then your Duncans and Menegolas are going to be the two biggest winners here.
Yeah, look, I think the Geelong's almost starting to turn into Collingwood in the sense that they have so many stars in the midfield, but not much up forward. And they win if their defence works because their forward line very rarely works, and it's all about the defence because you know what the midfield is going to do. They're going to get a lot of the ball and they're going to spray it in, and they'll win through weight of numbers, through weight of possession in the forward half, not necessarily through a functioning forward line. So yeah, I think there's room, as there is at Collingwood, for a lot of fantasy points in the midfield at Geelong.
Yeah, the only difference I had to you there, Stace, was I had Coniglio in at 17. I really like him, what he
Wow.
does. Yeah,
That's a gut
you know
feel.
me.
That's a big call. That's a big call. So who
Oh.
was out?
If he stays fit, he's going to be one of the best mid. He'd be top 10 midfielder easily this year if
Well,
he stays fit.
you and this is the point. So he doesn't trust Paddy Cripps when he's played 58 out of the
Yeah.
66 games. Coniglio's only played 45 of the 66 games. That's a
Okay.
massive difference when you're
I
talking
thought he
trust
actually had
factor.
more than that, but no, I'm big raps for Coniglio. But yeah, Sloane just outside my top 20. Yo, 20 for me. McRae, Billings at 14, Heaney at 12, Oliver 11. So pretty similar mid-teens there.
Yeah, just on Grundy, I actually put him on the front cover of the first draft kit that I did last year because I had him and Max Gawn ranked in the top, I think it was the top handful, because they were just so much better than the baseline ruck. But the advent of the third man up rule removal last year has meant if you use value-based drafting as the basis for your rankings, which I would hope that you guys at least pay some attention to if you don't actually use the actual system itself. The problem with ranking a bloke like Grundy is that even if he does score 100, you can get someone off the free agent pool or waiver wire, whatever you call it. It's actually called the free agent pool in AFL fantasy, not the waiver wire. You can get someone off there who scores 85. So you're only going to get 15 points more from Grundy than someone random like a back Ben McAvoy who might be on the in the free agent pool. So why would you? Whereas if you're looking at a midfielder, the player that you get off the free agent pool is probably going to be getting maybe 80 for you. Whereas if you're drafting a midfielder in the top 10, you want 110, 115 out of them. So you want another 35 or 30 or 35. So which is why in my rankings this year, I think the first ruck off the board is at 38, which is Cruiser. I've got Grundy as the fourth one off the board at 84. Unfortunately, it sucks because it means it's a bit more boring, but rucks just aren't in the conversation in the top rounds anymore, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and look, I would agree with that to a point. It's just when Cox wasn't playing, Grundy was averaging 115. Like, he was a legitimate captain option. But we're obviously with you on the rucks are devalued situation
Immensely.
now. But I mean, what are you supposed to do at the time? You can only go off the evidence. And for 16 games or 14 games last year, you got a captain every week.
Sorry, I'm just going to say, if you were going to draft Grundy in a startup keeper league in the first round or the first couple of rounds, you're betting that Nathan Buckley's gonna get the shaft sooner rather than later, because that's what you're saying. You're saying that the Buckley's plan of putting Cox in the forward line and Moore in the back line is going to fail. And I'm with you. I hope that happens. It's not great for the Buckley lovers, but I hope that happens, because I think Moore's better in the forward line anyway. And maybe they'll find some way to put Cox in there as even if they shift Moore back. But they haven't found the solution there. And maybe the solution is to get rid of Nathan Buckley. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good plan.
And I will say with Brody Grundy here, I didn't give him a position boost, so he's unlike a defender or a forward. So it is raw data that's saying, bang, this is where he sits compared and valuing it against the midfielders. So having a Brody Grundy versus having an Ollie Wines is you actually get a longer term scoring power. Right now, he's at 13, Wines is at 14. So that was 107 versus 99 average last year. It also depends. So when we do these, we're trying to cater for 14, 15 different league setups. So our keeper league is a 12-team league. It's got one ruck playing but one sitting reserve. So everyone's got two rucks. So all of a sudden you've got 24 rucks off the board. Unfortunately, on the waiver wire, you've only got someone pumping out a 40 or a 50. So he's a catch-up. So it depends on what league setup you've got. I think one of AFL Fantasies is actually quite small, but it still includes two ruckmen on the ground.
Well, yeah, that certainly affects things. And
Yeah,
value-based
absolutely.
drafting, it's highly contingent on actually what you set your baselines at,
Correct.
depending. So yeah, it's very complex that way.
Yeah, the boys keep on telling me off because I make opinions and they sit around. That's only if your league set up that way, statesman. Okay, fair enough. So moving
but,
on. Oh, sorry, Jono.
Just we'll get to that in a sec. But if you like the show, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, and Podbean. If you hit on iTunes, hit the 5-star review button, and leave the review. Like we've had three this week. So starting
Jesus.
Off with sexy Mitch kicks it off with easily the best fantasy podcast out there, and especially for the lads who use the draft the best fantasy platform going around, legends. The next is from G Franks 45. He says, "Happy days listening to you boys. Very disappointed you are now getting pumped around with the draft site. Good for you, but I feel you're a secret weapon in my league." He's looking forward to some more good listening prior to his draft. He would also love to hear an injury pod on all the off-season surgeries and players coming back from previous injuries to the players that have missed a week, a month of preseason. Cheers, champions. And the last one is from I Am Someone Else. He just says, stumbled onto you guys doing some research for the upcoming season for my Keeper League and can't stop listening. All you blokes know your stuff and have given me some good ideas. Hopefully the other coaches haven't been listening. Keep the pods coming. Would love some more Keeper League and Sleeper Breakout chat if you can. So thanks to those three guys there for the reviews. Only takes a couple of seconds and we really appreciate it. But Statesman, kick us off with your final 10 there.
Final 10. So 21, defender here, gentlemen. We talked about him a little bit before, 24 years of age. Jake Lloyd, average of 93 last year, which does include the one where he got knocked out. So it really should be around that 96 mark. So we expect him to keep on continuing a pretty healthy scoring role. As Monty said before, the only concern is whether he actually goes a bit fuller into the midfield rotations. Wouldn't hurt his scoring, but obviously losing that defender status would be an issue for a ranking. 22nd is Rory Sloane. Held back a little bit because of his age, obviously getting to 28, 105 and 106. Sounds very consistent, but we know consistency of scoring is not Rory Sloane's bag, although he is pretty consistent on the park. 23 is Seb Ross, 103. It's been a long time coming. He is 25 years of age this year, so this is the first time he's finished with a over-the-ton average, but pretty consistent performer. Although he's not always on the park, it's only 54 games out of 66, but points per minute is pretty good. 24, Mitch Duncan at 26, obviously his major breakout. It's only a 1 year at the moment, but we're hoping that's a thing that continues. Always been a very good player, but Chris Scott had changed his role a few times. I think he made a point about halfway through 2016 and said we'd done the wrong thing by Mitch. He's a midfielder only. Then proceeded to play him on the half-forward flank for the next six games. So would have upset a few that brought him in during those weeks. But his scores over his years has been affected by his role. Let's hope that the Gary Ablett recruitment doesn't change his role to back out the flanks. Stephen Canelio fits in at 25th position, held back a little bit, really his last two averages being 98 and 104, haven't hit the heights of probably what we expect from him, but he's also only played 45 games we talked about before, which does hurt him a little bit when we're talking using the data. Number 26 is Zorko, 29 years of age, which brings his points back, but 114 average was just superb last year, 106 the year before, 63 out of the 66 games. Yes, when he does get tagged, it hurts the owners, gentlemen. There's no doubts about that, but he can also score very, very big. 27 is Brad Crouch, the lesser Crouch, or one would argue probably the more talented Crouch, but a little bit more injury prone too. Only played 47 of the 66 games, turned up with 101 average last year, and also 87 the year before. His points per minute is very impressive, gentlemen. That's 112. So between the two Crouch boys, they can rack up the footy. So if you've got them both, don't be sad. One's going to be scoring big. Hopefully both are. Number 28, another ruckman, 25 years of age, is Maxie Gawn. Obviously, blind a year the year before, but missed a few games. But it is 48, so it's more than Coniglio, more than Brad Crouch out of the last 66 games. So we think of him as injury prone, but I think he's only ever played the one full season. So that's the thing that's always going to hold Maxie back. Apparently pretty fit this year, so let's see what happens. Should be, I would say, in the top two, maybe top three ruckman this year. Cruiser, Grundy, if he's free, and Gawn would be the obvious three. 29 is Tommy Rockcliffe, held back by age and games played. The man's a superstar. He can score. We've seen him play the actual best AFL season in history, so let's see if he can do it again. But at 28 years of age, change of club, it's a bit of a question mark. We don't know how the shoulder is. There are some reports saying that it wasn't fantastic after a bit of match practice, but let's see what happens there. But the figures still do add up. And number 30, Jack Crisp, defender, 24 years of age. 88, 84 with the position. But guess what, gentlemen? 66 games out of 66. So he sits there in number 30. Very quickly, the ones that missed out were your best mate, Steve, Lockie Hunter, Aaron Hall, Gibbs, Viney, Shill, Sidebottom,
Viney,
Dan Hand.
Give your head a shake, pal.
Pendlebury, Dalhouse, Nat Fife, Luke Shuey, Toby Green, Heppel, Lyons, Gaff, Farini. Wish I could have got him in there. Stevens, Collegesny. SPS at number 51. Would you believe it?
No, I don't believe you'd have him ranked in a sensible position. That's quite unbelievable. I'll give you your whiffs here, buddy. Toby Green, 22. You can't not give me a guy who's going to be a top 10 forward forever. It's just a complete whiff. Brandon Ellis at 26. Talk about Mr. Durable. Ellis. Loves the new role. Playing well. The Chad at 29.
I'm quickly searching for Ellis. I mean, I rate him, and I rate him this year, but his scoring the last 2 years have been pretty poor.
Well, if he's going to be a 85-plus defender, then sign me up for that, who doesn't miss games. The Chad at 29, come on, how do you not have the Chad? He's going to be a forward forever.
62.
And Connor Blakely, sign me up. If he gets defender status going forward, points per minute beast, I want every piece of that action.
Yeah, I agree, if he does get defender.
Statesman, if, of the names you haven't mentioned so far, who do you think's the biggest dark horse to come over the top and make it into that group you're talking about?
Well, Aaron Hall has the potential to be a 110 averaging midfielder, but it's a bit hard to tell what's going to happen with the new coach, but he certainly has the potential. Lockie Whitfield, I think, has massive scoring potential. Only 23 years of age, but we haven't seen the max out of Lockie so far, and there's quite a few reasons why, but he's only played 49 games out of the 66. But he has huge potential. I will also say points per minute indicate that Jared Lyons could be a scoring star, but whether role consistency is going to be there. I also think, depending on how the concussions are going, KK. But Steve actually mentioned the number one, which is Connor Blakely. Massive scoring potential.
A right. Couple of names I was expecting to hear. I didn't hear there. Hurley?
Hurley?
Yeah. I've got him... projected at 95 this year. Now, I know he's 27, but you can still expect 3 or 4 good years out of him, and that's good enough for someone like Dangerfield.
Yeah, I certainly didn't rate him. I think he's a one-year wonder at this stage. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but we talked about him about 3 weeks ago, and I'm just a little bit concerned that it was a one-off.
And a couple of forwards I was expecting to hear, Jeremy Cameron. I mean, you might say the same thing about him, but also Jack Martin. I think they're both on the up.
Yeah. Martin, I did have, and he didn't miss it by much. But Martin, I rate, but still don't. Number 50 he got. So Martin. I'm just a little bit unsure of whether Martin's just going to be a really good, classy player or whether he actually ends up being a fantasy beast. I reckon he turns 23 this year. It's sort of now or never. I mean, let's see. Jack Watts was number one draft pick, but he's never proven to be a fantasy star. And to me, Jack Martin's got that written all over him. Is that touch of class when you need? He's not going to get the hardest ball in history, and you're going to go, wow, that was a good bit of play. But you know, the score on fantasy scoring is not.
What are your thoughts on Joe Danaher? Did you have him ranked in your top 140 there?
yes, I did. And you know, I was high on him for a breakout last year, and he delivered the majority of what I expected. The key position forwards are really hard to manage sometimes. And look, they're going to pump out some big scores. They'll get decent averages. But outside Lance Franklin, maybe Handsome Tom's got the potential. There's not many that actually become premium in their
fair
lines.
Enough.
Yeah, my take on that in the draft kit was that we might have actually seen his ceiling in year five, because year five is traditionally the year that centre-half forwards reach their ceiling. And unless he moves up the ground, which I don't think he's going to, because he's more dangerous, he's better for the team near goals. Unless he becomes Tom Lynch, the Lynch of the Crows, which he's not going to, he's much more like Tom Lynch of the Suns. And I think that we might have seen
fair enough
what he's capable of.
All right, we've got some questions quickly to run through. Kicking it off with James Barovic off Twitter. He says, "How should my draft strategy change in an 8-team redraft with captains? Should he look to prioritise his midfields before he takes any defenders or forwards?"
I think I saw a draft done on Twitter with captains the other night, and I think the entire first round was midfielders, and you'd expect that to be the case, I suppose. But then the second round was half midfielders and half not midfielders, and I think that's also on the cards as well. So yeah, I think after the first round, you can get right into your non-mids, absolutely.
Yeah, it seems the way it's going to be this year without that unicorn player like a Doherty, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems like pretty vanilla first rounds all in all formats. From John Hines, he asks, Smokey, for your top 10 in draft leagues to be where they're drafted or where they're going to finish as well.
Well, why don't we all give one each here? I think a real Smokey to finish as a top 10 mid could be Dom Sheed. I don't project it happening, but I'm just saying as an absolute out there Smokey, it could absolutely happen. Someone who people might draft in the first round that you don't expect. Maybe a ruck. Maybe someone still values rucks and just looks at a Cruiser or a Grundy, especially in your Dream Team formats. Grundy still had a big average despite the splits. That might surprise me.
And I'll go, my roughie to be in the top 10 would be Aaron Hall.
I actually wrote an article about this and I forgot who I wrote about, so...
I will say, I think just for this year, because you might not retain back designation, but just for this year, in terms of value-based drafting, you're always looking for someone who scores over the baseline for their position, and he might not get in the top 10 scorers, but I think Luke McDonald might provide top 10 value this year, because they're talking about him moving even further into midfield and almost to permanent midfield, and he showed late in the second half of last year that when he does that, he can score like a champ, and there's going to be a lot of games that are shootouts at Docklands against Minnows, and he's going to get a lot of ball, and with no Sam Gibson there as well. Basically, play the Sam Gibson role, and he's shown he can really rack up scores in that scenario.
Yeah, he certainly racked them up in the AFLX on Friday night too.
Which we all loved.
I was hoping no one had mentioned that.
I didn't mind it. What was everyone's problem? I'm usually the hater of everything, but I didn't mind it.
I was there live and watching Ryan Burton roost him from 70 metres was just fantastic.
That's what it's all about.
It was a good circle work before, at training. But when does the real stuff start? This week, obviously.
This Friday night, I think it is. AJS Hawker on Twitter asks, he's playing in a fantasy 5-7-5-1-4 league, and he's got a Cat supporter in that league who's likely to grab Zach Smith before he wants to. If Zach Smith does go, do you think he should go for a late ruck, as in a Sandy-Darcy combination, and just rotate the two? Because we know Sandy's going to get injured eventually, so I don't mind it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a magnificent option. Go late. If we're ever going to talk about what the bus could be on a first or second round pick, it's generally your ruckman in the last few years. So I think, now I could be wrong, gentlemen, but I swear it was about 180 mark last year's Keeper League draft that I picked up Matty Cruiser. So he ended up being the number one scoring ruckman at 188. So the 18th round, 19th round. So I think a Sandy-Darcy combo sounds pretty juicy to me.
Yeah, I don't like taking that bench spot on a ruck. I think they're both going to play. I don't mind it, but I'd probably rather a Nank or a Billy Longer.
I think a late draft pick from a ruck, and maybe it doesn't actually matter all that much, because you can probably make much more hay out of your top draft pick. So, even if your late ruck draft pick falls over, even if it is Sandy or who plays 10 games or 8 games, it's not going to matter, because you're going to be able to pick up a McAvoy or whoever from the free agent pool, and they'll just be able to slot in and get 85s for you, and you'll be happy with that.
I could go watch that Tonya Harding movie, and we'll just kneecap Max Gorn and Cam Gunnison will rise from the ashes.
Actually, watch that. That was quite enjoyable. Can I also say, I've got a predictor that the little Smokey Ruckman for this year might actually be Naismith.
Give your head a shake, statesman. It's Billy Longer.
Sinclair, Naismith, Darcy Cameron, they're all going to be playing, aren't they? From Jeremy Bird asked, if Zach Williams was thrown back in the pool in a keeper league, is he worth taking as a bench spot?
In a super coach, yes. In a dream team, yeah.
Didn't say what the format was.
Yeah,
I didn't love him in midfield last year. I thought he was a bit of a a sheepdog and didn't actually offer all that much in midfield. He spent a lot of time, around the packs. I'm not sure he wants to be Zach Jones, but he hasn't quite got the figured out how to do that yet, I think. He doesn't know exactly where to run. Maybe that'll happen in the off season. But yeah, I think the Giants' need in the back line is going to be so great that they're going to have to move him back there, I think, eventually. Which would be great for his positional designation, but it means he's going to be a limited player, and he's probably not going to be moving into midfield in future.
I agree with Steve. Supercoach, yes. Dream team, no. And from
I didn't say
Guru,
no. I just kind of shat myself there. That was
think about it. Our last question is from Guru Glasser. Who would you keep out of Lockie Weller or Jordan DeGoey? He's leaning towards DeGoey, but now with the old driving incident, he's not too sure and a bit worried.
I think the answer to that is
Yeah. Playing in the guts under a new coach who were crying for quality midfielders, go with Lockie Weller. But the reason we have Monty on the show is he's got his draft kit out. He's while the rest of us were enjoying summer at the beaches and enjoying barbecues, he was indoors slaving away to get this marvellous product out. Why don't you tell us a bit about it, Monty?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that had been coming out for, I think, 4 or 5 years previously with Footy Profit had done it. And I approached them about taking it over because I thought, I mean, while the Footy Profit kit has been great, I've read the Football Outsiders and those sort of big prospectuses they get in America, and no one previous to what I've done had the time to be able to make one. No disrespect to the Footy Profit guys, but they've got jobs. And they've got, lives that they need to lead, and they haven't got the time that I can devote to this sort of thing. And I was able to, I think their draft kits were 30 pages, and I think the official AFL fantasy ones similarly that sort of size. And I've managed to be able to put out 2 years of 200-page draft kits with small type, I must say, 120,000 words each. So I wanted to create something that was of that level of quality to raise the bar for the rest of the industry. And yes, it did take a lot of effort, especially this year because I've got two young kids, and that's not easy trying to fit this around. But yeah, I'm very pleased with the product, and it apparently sold like hotcakes last year, and we'll hopefully do so again this year. And yeah, the Ultimate Footy still is the number one app of its type. It comes from market leadership to start off with. Went back when Ryan Power was doing it independently, and obviously now with Fairfax, it's still going strong. And it's an industry where there's a lot of change, and I think Ryan's now working for FanHub. So we'll see what happens in future. And I think FanHub's managing it, so everyone's got their own viewpoint on how that works. And the feedback from all the Ultimate Footy Facebook posts is they all want an app, and apps are great. But I think there's I would hope that people get enough value out of the draft kit, even if they're not actually in an Ultimate Footy league. That because I think it's a when you do a draft kit like that, even if you're doing it for Dream Team or AFL Fantasy, or if it's Supercoach, the same things apply. It's about the system. And that's the other thing I wanted to do, was to educate people about the value-based drafting systems, to get a system in place so you can have a website. In this case, obviously, I've run it through FanFooty. There's this feature there called the Fandex, which has basically all the rankings that are in the draft kit. And you can then take those rankings as your base, and then modify them according to if you think that Zach Merritt's going to score a lot more than I've got him projected at, you can change the number, and then that'll automatically flow through to a different ranking. And this is a bit more science, I suppose. And I mean, you can always sit there and do your rankings and do it via just text editing, but we're in the internet age where websites have spreadsheets and databases, and you can actually apply a bit more science to it if you've got the right software behind you. And it's something which we've in America they're used to for decades now. They've had these sophisticated tools, and I've tried to develop that sort of thing here for the benefit of people to make it a bit more of a an enjoyable thing for people who want to get into it a bit more. And people who are listening to this podcast obviously want to get into it a bit more than the average, so hopefully it'll be attractive to them.
Yeah, and that's I gotta be honest, this is one thing I love about following Monty just on Twitter is that you're not one of the sheep. It's not just an I reckon thing. It's it's about educating the player, and I love that. That's the game theory behind the game instead of just this is going to happen because like Cade Simpson's going to average more because Sam Doherty's out sort of thing. There's more theory behind how you draft it, and I really enjoy that. And I think anyone who purchases a tool is going to absolutely get a wealth of knowledge. And even just following on Twitter, it's a great follow. I certainly enjoy it myself. And going against the herd, like doing something like this is what I project Zach Merritt to do. We don't have to agree with it, but I damn well
No.
respect the opinion.
But it's also that, I've built the system so that if you disagree, you can go to the website and it's free to, join up with FanFooty, obviously, and you can make your own. You can amend it, you can fix it to what you want it to be. But it's the system works in America, and it's this is the story of fantasy football in general. It was made in America originally, and this is one of the premier tools that they have in America to put a bit more science into the theory of drafting. And yeah, I'm proud that it's that we've actually got a working system here, and hope, and obviously the feedback last year was great, and I'm happy to do it again.
No, outstanding. And just for the listeners, where can we get that, and how much is it?
The Ultimate Footy Insider a product, I believe it's called Insider Pass. It's $19.95, and there is a link if you log into Ultimate Footy. There's a link on the right-hand side of every page, I think, to buy it. So yeah, you get the draft kit, which is a downloadable PDF. You get weekly or daily news, and also weekly projections for every player every week.
Oh,
So
outstanding.
those are the three parts of it,
So it
and
just
it's something
says
that I
Zach
don't think
Merritt
anyone else
140.
offers. Only if he's not getting tagged, which is probably most weeks, actually.
Right, that wraps up the show for this week. Thank you very much to Monty for coming on the show and telling us about the draft kit. If you want to follow him on social media, you can do that by checking him out at Monty on Twitter. That's a zero for where the O is. You can check us out, the Draft Doctors. We're at the Draft Doctors and at Statesman33. We do have the Facebook search the doctors there, the Draft Doctors there, and the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, and the mock site, mock.thedraftdoctors.com.au.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.